It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. In this installment of our series of interviews with Wisconsin candidates for governor, we'll speak with Arnie Enns, the Wisconsin Party candidate. He's running against Libertarian Phil Anderson, Democrat Tony Evers, Independent Maggie Turnbull, Green Party candidate Michael J. White, and Republican incumbent Scott Walker. What's the top issue you want the next governor to focus on? What questions do you have for Arnie Enns? 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, email address ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Arnie Enns is the Wisconsin Party candidate for governor of Wisconsin and a business IT strategist. Arnie, welcome to the Morning Show.
Thank you, John.
Why do you want to be governor of Wisconsin?
That's a good question. Well, it's for a lot of different reasons, but when I really get down to it, it's about the stories that we tell ourselves and the stories I used to tell myself, too, about what our society is and what our shared experiences are and how those stories haven't worked very well for us of late. Things like, if you work hard, you'll get ahead. Things like, my kids are going to have it better than I'll have it. Or things like, a constantly growing economy is good for us. But these things are problems that these stories don't work for us like they used to anymore. And we're kind of getting away from believing that what we have is going to give us a future that we want. So, you know, my kids aren't going to have it better than I had it. Our democracy is really not working for me. It's working for corporate interests. Our economy is really only interested in profits, not necessarily in the planet that we all share. So basically, I want to run because these stories aren't the ones that we talk about in our public life. They're not the ones that we talk about in politics. And I think that we have to start talking about them, that our system's not really working and our stories aren't working, and we have to do something different if we really want to address them.
What is the Wisconsin Party?
It's my own invention, really. I thought about running as an independent, but there's a space on the form where you fill it out that says, you know, other or party. So I said, well, if I just run and nothing comes of this, then it really wouldn't have accomplished as much as it could have. But if we can do something to form another party and it becomes something more than myself, well, it can turn into more of a movement of things, then it has more value than me just running as an independent in an election cycle. So I put the Wisconsin Party there because I think we have to have more than just a two-party system. There are the Libertarians and the Greens and another party called the Constitutionalists within Wisconsin. But I think that we can have another one as well, one that represents all the people that don't vote, because if you look at the last five midterm elections, less than 50% of the people who are eligible to vote actually participate. And most people feel disempowered and disenfranchised by our system, so they don't participate. And I want to have people like that be able to have a voice. And so I thought starting a party would be a good way to do it. And even beyond that, I don't want it to just be about Wisconsin. I think all politics is local. So should we all, I ideally like to see like an Appleton party, a Superior party, a Dane County party, and there for all the people that live in that area to be able to be involved in politics and be able to have a voice in government without falling into either saying you're a Republican or a Democrat. So that's kind of the idea behind the Wisconsin Party. It's stuff that I'm going to continue to work on even after the election on November 6th.
Well, let's take a look at your top issues, one of which is to take back our government. What do you mean by that?
Well, right now, our government really doesn't represent us. For the most part, it represents special interest groups and big money and lobbyists. And you don't have to just take my word for it. There's a Princeton study that was done about 4 years ago by a couple of PhDs, and they looked at the relationship between large government sorts of decisions and programs and laws that got passed over a 20-year period versus what people generally wanted for laws and for the rules of our society. And the thing doesn't have a correlation in between what people want, what the general society wants, and what the laws are. But there was a high statistical correlation in between lobbyists and people with money and the sorts of things that they want to have happen. Everybody has examples of it, right? It's the dark money. It's this money in our election cycle. It's the money with the lobbyists. And if you have that money and you spend it in our electoral system or in our legislative system, your voice is heard. but the voice of the common person is lost. So we have to change our system, and we have to get that money out of politics. We have to get the corruption out of our government so that we can, if we reform our government, then we can work on the really hard things in our society, which are things like climate change and the like. We can transform ourselves to address fundamental problems that we don't really talk about.
Would you say that the Wisconsin Party would lean a more conservative, more liberal, or don't those labels actually mean anything in your context?
Well, I think we put too much into those things because, yeah, if you remember Carl Sagan, right, in Cosmos, and he had this great pale blue dot imagery that he used, and if you pan out far enough from planet Earth and you look at it as a dot, you know, we're all one tribe. We find all these ways to create differences between us, and we create our own tribes, and we try to, we want to belong to stuff. So we have these associations and these identities, and left and right and blue and red and Republican and Democrat are just more of them. And we have to step back and find our commonality from stuff. So I don't want to lean in any direction because I think the common things that we all agree with are pretty obvious. It is government should represent people. Do you believe that we have a democracy? Demos, people, is the root word of democracy. Do you believe our government's about the people? And leave it better than you found it, the second thing on my platform. We teach our kids these things, right? And everybody wants to do that. We don't want to use things up and not leave anything for future generations. There are simple things that span both parties that we falsely claim are only two choices today. So it's not like it's a liberal or a conservative thing. It's more about what are the common things that we all have to face in our society if we're going to make it work for us.
So what does taking back government look like if you're elected?
Well, the first thing I do is there's this great thing that a bunch of constitutional lawyers have put together, both on the left and the right. It's called the American Anti-Corruption Act. And it's a piece of paper that's sitting out there that you can download off the internet. And we should have whoever's going to be our attorney general start working on implementing that stuff. Our next governor should make that stuff law within our state. It's the kind of policies we need to enforce. And it's all about essentially getting money out of our electoral process. And I know Citizens United makes that very difficult, and that corporations are and people are able to use money as free speech. But there are things that we can do, and there's things we can do as citizens to say, you know, here's the thing. If I got 20 flyers in my mail from you, I'm not going to vote for you. We can decide to do that too. But there's also things and laws and policies and procedures that we can put into place. And it's stuff like term limits as well. Everybody, both Republicans and Democrats, say, I'll vote for term limits. You shouldn't be a career politician. But yet when they get into office, it never happens. They make all these promises. And me being not a Republican or a Democrat, I can go into office and say, hey, guys, this is our chance. Let's really fix this. I have the support of the state of Wisconsin to hold both parties accountable to passing stuff along the lines of the American Anti-Corruption Act. Don't want to go into all the details. There's essentially 9 major things within it. You can look at it on my website, or you can look it up online. It's a great set of policies.
You're not taking any money for your campaign. Why?
Well, it started last year when I was thinking about running, and I was talking with my father, and he related a story to me about meeting Bill Proxmire, who was a state senator in D.C. for the state of Wisconsin. And he said how he had met him a few times. And Bill Proxmire would just go shake his hand, say, I'm your senator, or I'm running for Senate. Here's my business card. And if you need anything, let me know. The last 2 times that Proxmire ran for office, he spent less than $250. And he won the statewide election for senator. So I'm using that as my model, basically. I'm not taking money from people, and I'm trying to bring back that kind of spirit, that anti-corruption stuff, the it's about the people thing that Proxmire had done.
All right. We're talking with Arnie Enns, Wisconsin Party candidate for governor of Wisconsin. If you have questions for Arnie, 800-642-1234, the number to call, 800-642-1234. What's your top issue you want the governor to focus on in the next term? I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. In today's installment of our series of interviews with Wisconsin candidates for governor, we're hearing from Arnie Enns, the Wisconsin Party candidate. He's running against Libertarian Phil Anderson, Democrat Tony Evers, Independent Maggie Turnbull, Green Party candidate Michael J. White, and Republican incumbent Scott Walker. What's the top issue you want the next governor to tackle? 800-642-1234. Arnie, according to an audit of the State Department of Transportation last year, about a third of Wisconsin state highways were in fair or poor or worse condition than in 2015. And a report from transportation research group TRIP released last month showed that half of major locally and state-maintained roads and highways in the state rate as poor or mediocre. What do you see as solutions to repairing and investing in Wisconsin's transportation system?
It's pretty straightforward, I think. I've always been taught, and I try to lead my life, where I pay for things out of my current budget. So if we have transportation issues, we really should look at the most direct way, even though it's a regressive tax, to do a gas tax increase. That is a start. There's other things you can do with the general funding to pull money out, but we have to pay for the things that we use today. We can't, and I hate this term, to kick the can down the road, because people use it all the time, but we do that. We do that in our personal lives, and we get into trouble. We do it as a society, as a government, we get into trouble. So I'm a big believer that we have to take care of our infrastructure, and we have to pay for it out of our current revenue streams for stuff.
What about the fact that so many vehicles these days are coming into use that don't use any gasoline? They have they're all electric, or maybe they're hybrids, and so those people are using the highways, putting a lot of miles on, but not paying a tax. How do we capture funding for roads from those folks?
Well, so living in Appleton, Wisconsin, we have a wheel tax right now. They got put into place to help pay for the roads. We used to have an assessment that would go if you were going to redo a road in front of a house within the city of Appleton, but the city changed how we do stuff. So now when we register vehicles every year, we have to pay $5 per wheel for a wheel tax. And we could do stuff like that as well. And I think since we're talking about infrastructure, we really have to also think about where we want to invest for the long term. We have a economy and an infrastructure that's based upon a transportation grid that uses a lot of energy. If we're really going to deal with things like climate change down the line, we have to cut the way that we use petro gases and the oils that we use. It results in too much carbon dioxide, as well as other pollution issues in urban areas. So if we're going to think about dealing with that problem, we should also look at how we should do transportation differently, how we should think about urban planning differently, how we should look to find different ways to pay for that infrastructure as well. Because the model that we're using is going to be evolving over the next 20, 30, 40 years. And when you talk about infrastructure, that's a 30 to 50 year time horizon. We should start talking about that now. We shouldn't just assume it's going to keep on being the same way it's always been with our interstate highway system and with our local roads.
We also know that health care is on the minds of a lot of people in Wisconsin, and, well, that's a pretty broad subject, so let's try and narrow it down a little bit. If elected, what would you change given the current state of the health care system in Wisconsin?
Right. Well, the first thing is much like Tony Evers, I'd look to take the federal money to expand access for Wisconsin families that don't have access to health coverage right now. But to me, again, it's a big issue, and there's also the pre-existing condition thing, and this is, according to the stuff I've seen with polls, a number one issue most people in Wisconsin have concerns with right now. But I think our healthcare is fundamentally broken, and what I'd like to do is talk about it in a larger context, and that we really should look at stuff like single payer within the state of Wisconsin, even if the federal government's not going to do it. And the reason being is that within Wisconsin, or within the United States, we have almost $1 in $5 goes towards healthcare costs, according to numbers that were just released last year from the OECD, which is a group of approximately 32 countries that have market-based democratic systems. And the United States has twice the average cost devoted to healthcare as all those other nations, with outcomes that are in the bottom quarter in general across all the different measures for health. So to me, that just speaks to how wrong and broken our healthcare system is. And instead of working at the edges around its access to health insurance, we should go and deal with it head on and look at major structural overhauls to our healthcare system.
Another big issue perennially in elections is education. What would you, if elected, work toward for our K-12 schools, and what challenges do you think they face?
Oh, there's a lot of challenges in this space. The nature of our whole job environment, not that that's the only thing education is useful for, the nature of our society is changing, yet we're still using a model that came to the United States in the mid-19th century, in the 1850s or so. It's based upon a Prussian model. It's all about having people be obedient and essentially good rule takers and to conform to systems. And what I would like to do if I get elected governor would be to establish a blue ribbon commission that would look at reforming our whole educational system from the ground up. We have to ask ourselves the questions that we asked originally with the UW system about the Wisconsin idea and how can education best serve the state of Wisconsin and the people within it. And to do that, I think we have to redo our whole healthcare system. Our whole educational system. Right now, again, it's that Prussian model, but we need to follow what I call the four C's for things. We have to teach creative thinking. We have to teach critical thinking. We have to teach better communication. And we have to teach our students and ourselves how to collaborate better. Those are the skills we need to have a high-functioning society and an adaptable society. And that's not what we get out of our educational system today.
Arne Enns is the Wisconsin Party candidate for governor of Wisconsin. We're talking with him today as part of our series of interviews with people running for governor in the state. Let's talk about Foxconn, because that's been in the news a lot for the last year. If elected, what would you do about this Foxconn deal? What's your take? Would you renegotiate the deal if you could?
I'd renegotiate that thing in a heartbeat. I'd call up Matt Flynn and see what he was doing, because he was the guy that said he had a plan on exactly how he could legally kill the deal with Foxconn. To me, it's just a bad idea. It's $4.5 billion worth of subsidies and credits that we'll be giving to a foreign transnational corporation in order to put jobs in Wisconsin that aren't necessarily the kinds of jobs that are long-term sustainable or best for Wisconsin. I'm an IT guy. I'm a technology guy, right? So screens and LCDs, you know, 10 years from now, they might be gone. So many tech companies change so much over time, it's ridiculous. Who knows, 15, 20 years from now, we might be using things like haptics or different form factors for interfacing with visual sight from systems or inputs into systems. And we're going to spend $4.5 billion. It's like going to Las Vegas and putting all your money on red number three, spinning the wheel and hoping that the number lands there. Did a little bit of math a while back, too. Wisconsin has 72 counties. $4.5 billion would be $62 million for each county for doing investment in new businesses or startups that are sustainable, that are based in Wisconsin, that are widely distributed geographically. I mean, if you had to choose, which one would you choose? Or if you had to say, which one would you invest in as an investor? I know almost every investor would say, take the distributed risk. They're not going to say, place one big bet like that. So to me, Foxconn is just a ridiculous thing that was very politically motivated. And I don't think it's good for Wisconsin. I don't think it's good for the citizens of Wisconsin.
Let's take a phone call. Kenneth is with us in Janesville. Kenneth, go ahead.
Hello. Are you going to do about the problem of throwing away your vote and that voting for you is going to get the worst person elected?
Okay, Kenneth, we are almost out of time. People might say a vote for the Wisconsin Party is a vote thrown away. How do you respond to that?
Well, we have to start changing somehow, right? And I understand people, and I think people should vote their conscience, but it's not just choosing between two different systems. It's about being able to change our system overall, and that we need proportional representation over time. If we keep on going down this road of voting for one of the two major parties, our systems are never going to change. Our rules are never going to be changed. We're just going to keep on getting more of the same. And it's not just about voting. What I aim to do is, after the election on November 7th, keep on working on these things through things like the Wisconsin Party, try to have that be part of a larger movement that will continuously work to reform our electoral process, as well as our government rules and regulations, as well as the critical issues of our day that we haven't talked about yet, which to me is climate change and the shorter runway that we have left in order to really address that fundamentally. So voting for one of the two parties is just going to get you more of the same. If you're happy with that, vote for Scott Walker, vote for Tony Evers, and do it with a good conscience. If you're not happy with the system and the way things work today, you have to start behaving differently, and that includes voting for a third party.
Do you think we're ready for that?
I think we have to be ready for that. Look at how many people aren't happy with either party. And look at how come politicians are looked at as being, I'm not slamming used car salesmen or anything like that, but we have a lower rating than what a used car salesman have. People think politicians are not good people. And part of that is because of how corrupt the system is. Serving in government and being a leader should be about servant leadership. It should be a privilege. It should be stuff that we should all feel called to do, and it should be an honorable thing. And we should be civic about our dialogue around it. And we should have the best and brightest in our society step forward to help lead us and to work through the major issues and the stories that aren't working in our society today. So, again, if you keep on doing what we're doing, all you're doing is reinforcing the special interest groups that are current two-party political systems.
All right. And Arnie, I think that's a good place for us to leave it. Arnie Enns, Wisconsin Party candidate for governor of Wisconsin and a business IT strategist. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, John.
To hear more candidate interviews or see coverage of the campaign, visit wisconsinvote.org. We'll continue our gubernatorial candidate interviews Wednesday with independent candidate Maggie Turnbull. I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Hispanic immigrants account for a large percentage of Wisconsin's farm workers. Access and affordability of health care remains a barrier for that demographic. Today on The Morning Show, we'll learn about a UW-Eau Claire School of Nursing program whose purpose is to ease that burden for the farm worker while providing valuable experiences for the students. Do you live in rural Wisconsin? If so, does that impact your ability to access health care? Are you a farmer? What challenges do you have when it comes to getting to the doctor's office? Have you used the services of the UW-Eau Claire Nursing Program? How was that experience? Let us know at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Lisa Schiller is an associate professor at UW-Eau Claire. She is also a family nurse practitioner, and she helped develop the Partners in Health program. Lisa, welcome to The Morning Show.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about the Partners in Health program.
Sure. So Partners in Health started back in 2011, and it is a partnership with Buffalo and Pepin County Public Health Departments, Puentes, or MF Interpreting, which is Interpreting Spanish Language Service. We have a partner that is a Spanish lecturer emeriti, Chippewa Valley Free Clinic, and dairy producers, of course. We go to 19 large dairies. So what we do at the program is provide screening services. We take senior students to large dairies. They do blood pressures, height, weight, BMI, tobacco and alcohol screening. We provide immunizations, tetanus, and influenza. We do TB screening and cholesterol screening, and also provide education on different health and safety topics.
Is the Partners in Health program, let me rephrase that. How is the Partners in Health program part of the curriculum for nursing students?
So the core, it's actually embedded in a first semester senior course, which is related to community health and leadership. It also is partially funded by a domestic intercultural immersion grant, where we seek to immerse students in different cultural experiences that are within the United States.
And it's been around for a few years now. How did it get started?
Well, actually back in 2011, one of my colleagues at the time, Sue Peck, had been taking students to see Hispanic migrant workers in the Wetumla area, where they mostly worked with vegetables in the summer. That kind of fell through, and I had been involved in some agricultural health and safety in the eastern part of the state with the Rural Health Initiative, mainly with dairy. So she knew that and came to me, and I said, well, why don't we just go to dairies? So I kind of joined the program at that point, and we started going to dairies. We started with six, basically through Sean Duvall, who is with Puentes, kind of introduced us to those places, and we've grown to 19 now.
And how did you realize the immigrant farm worker population was in need of a program like this?
Well, basically, with the shift in dairy to really large farms, there's less number of farms but larger production, there has created this need for workers. And immigrant workers actually have filled this void and account for about 60% of farm workers now in dairy. Many of them are uninsured or underinsured, and transportation is an issue, language is an issue, and so we just bring services to them, which is very common in agriculture in general, is services go to the farm.
So you mentioned some of the things that your nursing students do. What other kinds of care do they provide besides blood pressure, that kind of thing?
They do tuberculosis screening. Tuberculosis is endemic in the Hispanic population. They also provide tetanus vaccination, influenza vaccination in the fall, as well as education about occupational risk. Agriculture is like the most dangerous industry in the United States. So about how to protect themselves with personal protective equipment, proper lifting, as well as different health topics like how to read a label on food when you're buying food and what's proper serving size.
How many farms do they visit and how often?
So they visit 18 to 19 dairy farms each semester. So I get a new group of students each semester. So we go to two or three farms a day.
And how many faculty and staff are involved in this program as well?
So I'm faculty from UW-Eau Claire, and as I stated, Dale Gable, who is she's a emeriti lecturer for Spanish language, she comes along. We have another interpreter, Mercedes Falk, that comes with us, and then we have a public health nurse from either one of the public health departments come with us.
So the size and scope of the farms a student visit, are these all the large operation dairy farms, or are you still visiting some smaller farms as well?
We do see some smaller farms. They're mostly, I would say, middle-sized family farms. The average number of milk is probably about 700. So they're fairly large and have some employees. We see both local employees as well as the immigrant employees.
Lisa Schiller is an associate professor at UW-Eau Claire, also a family nurse practitioner, and she helped develop the Partners in Health program. What questions do you have about this program? And maybe you live in rural Wisconsin and you'd like to know more about what they're doing at UW-Eau Claire, and maybe share the stories that you might have of the challenges you face in rural Wisconsin accessing health care in your area. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Lisa, what are the most common health problems for farmers and farm workers that you've seen in Wisconsin?
Oh, I would say, you know, in dairy industry, we see a lot of musculoskeletal problems just because of the repetitive nature of the work and the lifting that goes into it. Other than that, I mean, it's just kind of usual everyday problems. Workers really don't have a resource, many of them, to ask questions about health. So we're there for them.
And beyond medical care, what else do the students learn?
Well, the students learn so much about Hispanic culture. We do, as well as about immigration, as well as about agriculture. So nursing is the largest sector of the healthcare workforce. We'll encounter farm workers throughout their career, no matter where they are, if they're in rural areas or urban areas. So we spend 5 weeks before we go out to the sites where we talk about agricultural health and safety. We talk about immigration. We talk about Hispanic culture, as well as some of the little things about screening and immunizations. So they learn a lot about a culture that's in their backyard that often many of them don't know is there.
How important is this experience for a student going into the healthcare industry? I mean, this is takes place first semester, their final year of school, so they're, you know, basically, what, 9 months away from launching themselves into the workforce in the healthcare industry. How important is this experience for them?
Well, I personally think it's really important, and I certainly enjoy reading their self-reflections at the end of the semester, how much it's actually changed their, I guess, perspective of agriculture as well as of rural culture as well as of immigration and Hispanic culture. So, like I said, they'll be able to take this in whatever setting they're in. So whether they're in the ER or public health, they're going to experience members of this population as they go through their career.
And how many of the people that come into your program were Spanish speakers themselves?
I would say it varies. So some semesters, this semester we have all Spanish minor students, and some semesters we have maybe half that are Spanish minors. So they get that opportunity then to use their Spanish language skills along with their nursing skills. So to be able to combine that is amazing for them. We do have interpreters with us, so students who don't speak Spanish do still have the opportunity to participate. And I think it's really important to learn how to use interpretation services. I mean, that's kind of a learned thing. It sounds like it'd be real easy, but you're actually talking to the patients rather than talking to the interpreter, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it makes perfect sense. And I would imagine that over time they become more accustomed to the language and may be able to speak enough to get by on their own?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So students, you know, are encouraged to learn phrases and, you know, it's amazing how well we as humans can communicate without speaking another language, you know. So it's all about body language, how you approach people, having a caring presence. A lot of them, and it's nice to see them. A lot of our students, like this semester, I have three of our students that did immersions in Puebla, Mexico, and three that did immersions in Costa Rica. And Puebla is right near Veracruz, where many of our workers are. So they're able to have conversations, you know, about where they live, or, you know, so that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And how big is your class each year of nursing students, approximately? I know it varies.
Yeah, it varies. It's usually six.
So you have six students, and the geographic area around Eau Claire that you cover, how big is that? How far out do you go?
We go to Pepin County, and we go to Buffalo County.
Okay. And people who want to find out more about your program, how can they do that?
They can certainly give me a call at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire.
Okay, and is there anything on your website about it? And we'll remind people about it at the end, but I wanted to give people a chance to maybe write that down.
Yeah, there is some information on the immersion itself on the UW-Eau Claire website. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, my office number is 715-836-4911.
And we'll give that information out again before the end of the hour. We're talking about a new program, well, not actually so new, it's been around since 2011, that connects nursing students with people who need health care on our farms in the Eau Claire area. Wondering if you're living in rural Wisconsin, what health care challenges do you face? Lisa Schiller stays with us. You can join the program at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. We're learning about a new program initiated by the UW-Eau Claire School of Nursing back in 2011, aims to help farm workers to get access to health care while at the same time providing a learning experience for its students. Do you live in rural Wisconsin? If so, does that impact your ability to access health care? Maybe you're a farmer. What challenges do you have when it comes to getting to the doctor's office? Have you used the services of the UW-Eau Claire Nursing Program, and how was that experience? 800-642-1234. ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Lisa Schiller is an associate professor at UW-Eau Claire. She's also a family nurse practitioner, and she helped develop the Partners in Health program. Lisa, we had a caller who couldn't stay with us earlier, Marie from Appleton, who wanted to know how many positive cases of tuberculosis are found in farmers and how they're addressed.
Sure. So we've had about 7% positive cases of TB. The public health department takes over, and if we do have a positive, they arrange to have workers have a follow-up with a healthcare provider. All of the cases that we've identified have been latent TB, which means it can't be transmitted. And all of them we've been able to treat, with the exception of two that were lost to follow-up. But they go through the public health department, and they make sure everything is taken care of.
How important are free clinics, like the Chippewa Valley Free Clinic, in your situation?
Well, in our situation, it's vital to our program. So when we first started this, our thought was, you know, it's great. We can go out and we can screen for blood pressure, we can screen for cholesterol. But if it's positive and you have a population that's mostly uninsured or underinsured, then what do you do? So Free Clinic has really stepped up and has been a great referral source for those positive screens that we find. They've had many an increase in interpreters at each of the clinics. So it really has been vital to the success of our program and vital to the success stories that we see, you know, patients we've identified diabetes or we've identified high cholesterol or blood pressure, and to see them get treated and be healthier is fantastic.
What do the farmers, or how do the farmers and farm workers who are receiving this health care respond to the program? What do they think?
Well, I think all of the farm owners are very grateful as it protects their workers. And the workers are all very eager to participate. We've been doing it so long that they kind of know that we're coming and they look forward to us coming. But we have really good response from both farm workers, from all farm workers, local and immigrant workers.
And as you mentioned, you're working with a lot of immigrant farm workers. We often hear that undocumented immigrants are nervous to reach out for help because they fear their status will be revealed. Do you encounter any of that when providing care for these workers?
Well, I think there's lots of barriers for immigrant farm workers. You know, we don't inquire as to their documentation status. But I do know that transportation is an issue, language is an issue. I mean, just navigating healthcare, period, is an issue, whether you're an immigrant or not. So I think we really help to bridge those barriers.
And you're bridging those barriers. You're creating some trust in the community, in your services. They come to rely on it. We get that. What do you think could be done policy-wise, maybe at the government level, to ease some of the health care burdens faced by rural residents and farm workers in our state?
That's a great question. I think that you know, the way our healthcare system is set up now, it's just there's definitely healthcare disparities in rural areas. There's disparities in healthcare coverage. I mean, so even if you look at farm owners, they're oftentimes underinsured where they have big deductibles. So I think we need to look at the whole insurance system and how that works to try and improve access.
Where does the Partners in Health program get its support from? You mentioned working with the Chippewa Valley Free Clinic, and they're providing some support there. How has the community gotten involved? How is your program supported?
So it's partially funded in kind from the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire because it is embedded within a required course. We also receive some funding from some differential tuition funds for the domestic intercultural immersion programs at Eau Claire. We have received some money from the Wisconsin Division of Health Occupational Services, some grant money through that. And our producers actually pitch in, too, as they are paying for influenza vaccines for their workers.
So do you see interest in from other parts of the state for similar programs?
We do. Actually, I've had many calls recently, and we're in the process of, I had done some consulting with UW-Madison, and they are rolling out their Badger Partners in Health program, health and safety.
So it would be similar to what you're doing up there in Eau Claire.
Yep, absolutely.
What have you heard from your students about their experience in the program? You mentioned earlier that you always like to get notes from them after they've been through this program. What are they? What's the main thing that they take away from this and their response to it?
I think they're fascinated with the complexity of agriculture, as well as some of the occupational risk that comes with it. They also, I think, learn about the immigrant community that's here in the Midwest. It's kind of a hidden community that a lot of people really don't know about, and many of them really have enjoyed interacting with farm workers, using their language skills. It's just been a great overall experience, I think, for them.
How does it change the way they see the profession of nursing?
I think it gives them a whole new perspective on community health, public health. They're so used to, in nursing school, they want to get on the med-surg floor and learn how to start IVs. But to learn what nursing care is in the community is a whole other thing and a great lesson for them.
What other immersion programs are available for nursing students?
They do have an immersion program where they go to Rosebud, a Native American reservation in the Dakotas, and they spend a week there working with that population.
Now, what's the biggest change that you've seen in this program? I mean, I'm assuming the program has evolved since it first started. What are some things, maybe some thinking that you had going in? What's changed for you as you've followed this program through the years?
Huh, that's a good question. Well, it's kind of evolved. It's grown, as well as our approach has changed. I work a lot with John Rosano, who's a dairy farmer in the Wamandi area. And we started to, in the preparation, do more cultural preparation for them. So we actually take a full day and go out to John's farm and do a tour and visit with some of the workers, where we're not doing a clinic. We're just getting to know them as people, getting to know what agricultural work is like. I have students meet with the Mexican consul as well as an immigration attorney. So some of those things have changed, where I think we have better preparation for the experience itself.
And how many of your nursing students come into the program never having been on a farm?
Oh, many of them. Some have seen like a calf born at the Minnesota State Fair, but other than that, many of them have not had experience on the farm. Many of them are farmers themselves, so I guess it's a kind of a range.
Mm-hmm. You get all kinds, and I'm sure it's an eye-opener for those who haven't been on a farm before. Once again, Lisa, how can people get in touch if they want to find out more about your program?
Certainly they can contact me via email or via telephone at my office at UW-Eau Claire.
Okay. Lisa Schiller, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate the conversation.
All right. Thank you.
Lisa Schiller is an associate professor at UW-Eau Claire and a family nurse practitioner who helped develop the Partners in Health program. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson.